accession number 29536, Mr. Bert Scrivens, Reel 5. Now, was there anything else happened, you know, while you were at St. Mary's Bay?
Oh, yes, quite a lot, one way and another. At St. Mary's Bay, we had taken possession of half a dozen or more houses to one side of the, to the east side to be exact, of the golf course at St. Mary's Bay, which went right down to the seawall, and one house on the seawall itself, which was our headquarters. There I had to learn to be an infantry NCO, as against an administrative NCO. And I had to learn the fast way. In other words, I had to get out all the manuals and study them and learn my field craft, my weapons training, etc., etc. We had a very realistic company sergeant major whose main aim was to get everybody to be as damn efficient as they could. He was a down-to-earth bloke who, in unarmed combat, used to say that the man's best friend is his boots, never mind the fancy stuff. And that's how we were trained by him. For instance, when we were doing the standard disarming a man with a rifle and bayonet, whereas most people had the scabbard of the bayonet on, or rubber bayonet, or substitute, whatever, he insisted on using a rifle and bayonet naked, and one had to demonstrate, to his satisfaction, that if you had the rifle and bayonet, you were going to kill the bloke opposite you, and it was up to him to disarm you. Otherwise, he took over the rifle and bayonet and you had to disarm him, which was something to be really feared. We all called him mad, but he was efficient. There's no doubt about that. He taught us all the dirtiest ways to do whatever, never mind the tricks and so on. Get in and never, ever pull punches, blows, whatever. The theory was that if it came to the real thing, you would pull a punch if you'd been used to doing so. He was very good, I must admit. Being an NCO, transferred as one, I was given a section of about 10 men, and they were my responsibility.
Now, how did you get on with these men? This is your first real, you know,
yeah. Well, yes. We had a house. One of the houses was my section. It was interesting. I had to learn to do everything as well as they could. I had to have had a strip of brain gun, blindfold, which meant I had to do a damn lot of practice on my own. I had to fire as well as, if not better than them. One of the rooms that I shared, the other bloke was an illiterate person who was a professional poacher in civilian life. He taught me a lot, how to make snares, and in fact we did actually make them from bare brass wire, just a coil of that, into how to naturalize them, catch rabbits and so on, how to catch pheasants, and how to skin and gut and so on. Very educational.
You did a fair bit of poaching at the time.
We didn't do any poaching as such because we were on open ground. But we did a little bit of one thing and another. But what was most useful was to teach me how to kill small animals, chickens and so on, how to paunch and gut, how to strip a bird, etc., which, being townies, nobody had ever thought of doing, to be honest. And they stood me in good stead later on in my army life.
Remember any others of your men, you know, that stand out?
Yes, there was one. He, strangely enough, seemed to know all sorts of things that we didn't. He was a country bloke. How the hell he'd ever got into London, I don't know. I don't know his background that much. But he was a country bloke with country law and so on, which was quite useful at times. Most of the others didn't ring too many bells with me. I was too busy trying to learn what I had to do, and had to do better than the rest. One of our duties was that we had to patrol the seawall at night.
Now tell me about that.
That was really a tricky one. Halfway across between St Mary's Bay and Littleston, on the Gulf Links, tucked under the seawall, was a little Nissen hut, which was the guard headquarters. And the guard commander, when I was on, of course I was guard commander being a lance corporal, and three others. And we took it in turns to be on the seawall, or rather the others did, but I had a special duty. We were equipped with a little arc light, a two-stroke generator, which nine times out of ten wouldn't start anyway, being two-stroke and run on petrol mixture, a sandbag emplacement on the seawall with a Hotchkiss gun, which I have to admit nobody knew how to fire, that was about it. And we were honestly expecting an invasion to come ashore in something like rowboats or some barges, maybe, but certainly not the way that invasions are really
done. Now, what would you do with this arc light?
Now, this arc light, if there was an invasion and the men on the seawall would shout down and we'd start up, would be to light the beach so that we could fire on them from our sandbag emplacements on the sea wall. In front of us on the beach we had erected scaffolding so-called tank traps. We worked them into the beach to stop anti-tanks, stop tanks and so on. I'm not sure that they would have. And then we were to fire on them and hold them up. The next line of defence, if we were taken off the seawall, would be across the Gulf Links for about, 100 yards or so, where we dug a line of slick trenches. And then another 100 or so yards back, right to the main road, coastal road that is, which ran from New Romney to Hythe, was another row of slit trenches. After that, I discovered to my horror that the general idea was that, as we knew, all sea gates, dikes, bridges, etc. were mined, and they went back to central positions where they would automatically be blown up, which would flood the marsh. I was much stupid enough to ask our platoon officer what happened after that. And he pointed to the line of hills, almost like an escarpment, if you look at it from the sea point of view, which includes Lym, Aldington, Ashford, Tenterton and so on, and said, "Can you swim that far?" And when I said, no, I don't think so, he said, well, hard luck then. That's about as far as I got with that. But all around those hills was artillery, who had instructions apparently to carpet shell the whole of the Romney Marsh, or the particular area in which the invasion was taking place, if it took place. That is about all we had. As far as my duties as the NCO was concerned, was that about three times, maybe four times a night, I had to walk along the sea wall down to our company headquarters, and next to it was a little wooden hut, rather like a garden shed, which was built against the sea wall, in which there was a coast guard. And I used to have to check that he was all right, and then walk along the sea wall, distance of a mile and odd, to Littlestone, where there were Marines, and check that they were all right, and then walk back again to my headquarters, the Nissen Hut, halfway in between. Later, when I thought about it, I thought, well, it's peculiar. There's Hitler and his horde across the other side of the channel, and on this side there was Bert walking a sea wall and two men. damn good job they didn't come for us. Another thing that used to happen quite regularly there, all fields and spare spaces, except the golf course, were mined, complete fields of mines. And because of the conditions of the ground, I think, they used to go sympathetic.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what happened by that is that the damp got at them, I think, and something like the vibration of a lorry going nearby would set off the whole damn field, and it would blow up, a complete field go up in one. It was a pretty frequent occasion, and then somebody had to go in after that, engineers usually, and check that there were no live mines left and relay mines in the area. We got quite used to it, to be honest, but it was a pretty hairy business for the engineers, I would have thought. In our spare time, some of the blokes used to go through the anti-tank traps, swim out a bit, lay out placer lines, static lines between two stakes with other lines and hooks and bait attached, and lay them out, wait till the tide came in and went out. And then they would... then the fish would be delivered to the cooks, who every night used to do fish and chips for the people who wanted them. As we were always hungry, they did a roaring trade, I must admit.
The beaches weren't actually mined then?
Some were, some weren't. The ones that were mined, for instance, in Lydd, the beaches there were mined. I went with a party rigging these anti-tank traps, and there was a party of engineers laying mines and the officer making his map of the positioning of the mines. I was told afterwards that unfortunately the officer stepped on one. Which of course destroyed the map of the minefield. I don't think I would ever go onto that beach again. Certainly not in civilian times. But that was the kind of thing that happened. I don't think it was a regular thing, but it was not unknown. We carried on with our training. We went on exercises.
Now, what were the exercises like?
Now,
you've got a bit more of a role in them now, haven't you?
Yeah. Now, the exercises, one I remember particularly, for some reason or other, I was made an umpire, which means you're non-combatant and wore a white armband. And I was put in charge of the village pub at St. Mary in the Marsh to make sure that no troops skived off in there, as was their wont. I had two men with me, and we got ourselves into a sort of barn that joined the pub and just sat it out, as it were. No, but one of the officers that I knew came herring up during the exercise and said he was being pursued by the enemy, who were the London Irish. They always were somehow. The enemy, I mean. And he said to me, "I don't want to be taken carrying all these maps," which was the details of the exercise on them. So he said, "You're neutral, I'll hand them to you." So I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do with them?" He said, "Well, not let the enemy get them." And he went tearing off. Presently, some of the London Irish came along and said, "Had I seen somebody?" And I said, "Yes," and I pointed them off into a different direction, which I shouldn't have done, but however, I did. And they said, "Oh, you got a map case there, is that it, or is that detailing it?" I said, "Well, it may or may not be, but unfortunately this has been burned because I'm a bonfire." Which was quite typical of exercises. And they said, "Ah, well, in that case, we'll go off," and they head off in the direction I pointed, which was completely the wrong one to catch the officer I'd seen. I don't know what had happened to his troops. They'd all seemed to disappear, however. And we made sure that nobody went into the pub. That's about all that happened as far as I'm concerned, and that was 2 day exercise. The troops never really knew what was going on, to be honest.
How realistic do you think they were, the exercises?
Completely unrealistic, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing ever happened the way it ought to have happened. The troops didn't know what the hell they were doing. They just did as they were told. We didn't know the overall. There was an exercise later on, but that is later in the story.
Okay, well, we'll say that.
Anything else while you're at St. Mary's? For St. Mary's, yes. For social life, we had hired a coach. It was organised by the battalion. We'd hire a coach from Ashford, and all our girlfriends, wives if they got as far as Ashford or whatever, used to come in it with their mums, as one always did in those days. And the recreation ground in New Romney, which was very close to the headquarters, which was the school in New Romney, we used to go down there, lay down a tarpaulin, and the regimental band in the evening, Saturday evening, always. And we'd rig fairy lights around the trees, which of course we couldn't use after dark, but we could use until the sun went down. And then we used to have a dance until the sun went down and it got quite late. And then all the girls and their mums and such went back on the coach. And we walked back to our various locations. For me, it was a mile and a half, 2 mile walk back to St. Mary's Bay. Not much else happened. Oh, yes. There was one occasion where we were manning a roadblock on that main coastal road.
Now, what was that duty like? Tell us a bit about the duty. What would you do on a road? How would you set a roadblock up?
Two knife rests, trestles with barbed and dannet wire on them, set at intervals and staggered so that a lorry could get round them, but had to slow to a walking pace to get round.
A chicane.
A chicane. And we manned it, and there was a password and all the rest of it, as usual. And an officer that we hadn't seen approached us from headquarters direction, in other words, New Romney direction. And he said he'd come to inspect us, but we asked for the password, and he didn't have it. We asked for identification, and I'm not sure whether he was being stroppy or what he was doing, but he didn't have any, he said, and he was a stranger to us, so we arrested him. He was a full lieutenant, and took him in the guard room, questioned him again, and he was really being bumptious about how he would see us all on a charge and all the rest of it. So we stripped him of his belt, braces, shoelace, well, bootlaces rather, and put him in confinement until somebody could prove who he was. Much to his annoyance, I must admit. But we thought it was quite a lark, and we thoroughly enjoyed it, to be honest. Eventually he was cleared, and he couldn't do anything because we were doing our duty to the letter, which was rather nice. Apart from that, we were doing usual section platoon exercises, learning field craft, building sandbag walls and defences, and so on. Really, that was about all, and I have to admit that I really was enjoying that kind of life rather than the administrative type I'd had before.
Now, how long have you gone there in, what, 41? You're not quite sure when, but...
Springish. Late in 41, well, later, about the end of August, I would think. Sergeant Major sent for me, and he said, you've been transferred. And I said, why and for what reason? He said, Rickolds have transferred you. He said, you're a tradesman, a technical storeman too. He said, the 8th Battalion have requisitioned one, and they want to make somebody. That records have turned up that you're an unemployed tradesman, therefore you're transferred to the 8th Battalion, which annoyed me, but records being records, there's nothing you can do about it. So I had to pack up my gear, and I was taken to Brookland, which was still on Larche, but towards Rye, where I reported. And much to the disgust of the 8th Battalion, I must admit, because they wanted to promote a person to a technical storeman and give him the rate of pay that a storeman got, and instead of which they got me.
Which, by then a corporal? Or not quite?
I don't think I was. To be quite honest, I can't remember when I was promoted corporal. But
so I'm still a Lance Corporal then?
I'm still a Lance Corporal.
Now, what company did you join?
I joined the headquarters company, the quartermaster's staff, as a technical storeman. Now, as I said, I wasn't wanted, and they didn't know what the hell to do with me.
Now, what do you mean? Did this show that?
Yeah, definitely.
In what way?
Well, they were a bit antagonistic, and they wanted to know what I knew and what experience I'd had, and so on, which I told them. But they were still left with the bloke that they wanted to make a storeman and couldn't, because I was then made up their establishment, and that was that. So they put me in charge of the MT stores, which was a shop on the main Brooklyn to Rye Road, filled with MT stores.
Now, what is that? Is that
The M
petrol
motor
or?
transport, yeah, all petrol. We hadn't didn't have diesel in those days.
What else was it?
That was all we had in those days, all that I ran across. But as they're a bit of a loss what to do with me, occasionally I was given other jobs, like when the battalion storeman went on leave, I was switched over to the battalion stores, which was housed in another building, the village hall to be exact, and I had to sleep there and look after those stores while the MT sergeant, motor transport of course, sergeant took over the technical stores. And we had to do exercises, and we went out on the firing ranges and so on.
Now, what were your impressions of the 8th Battalion in contrast and comparison with your
Well, I
regiment?
can't say that I liked them very much.
Now, why not? What were your first impressions of? Were they as good, or was it just they were rude to you?
They weren't exactly rude to me, but they weren't exactly brotherly, as it were.
Do you think they were
They
as good?
treated me sort of coldly,
But were
and
they
I
as
had to
good?
prove myself. Later on, of course, as I got to know them, they got to know me, things improved beautifully.
But were they as good? Did you think they were as well run? The officers were as good, you know, that it was as
Didn't have
military.
much contact with them because you must remember that we were all split up into villages all over the place, each company and so on. I had no contact with rifle companies. All I knew was headquarters. Quite often I used to have to go out with the quartermaster on when we did exercises.
What was that like?
Well, we automatically became umpires or neutrals, whatever, which was mainly driving from here to there and there to somewhere else. I hadn't a clue what the hell was going on, but I knew I didn't have to march from here to there, and just an absolute nothing because I didn't know what was going on. Occasionally, I was put on a roadblock where we had to stop all traffic and check for identity cards and so on. That wasn't bad. It was amusing, if nothing else,
That's during exercises.
during exercises. And then I did get on one where I was told that I was an anti-tank rifle and we were fighting then. An armoured car company, and I was to be in a certain section of road. So I stationed myself on a bend and waited and waited and waited, and eventually an armoured car started coming along. So I waved him down and said, "I'm an anti-tank rifle and I've just shot your driver." And he said, "Oh, thanks very much," and reversed up the road. And an umpire came up and said, "What's all this about?" I said, "I'm an anti-tank rifle. I was stationed down there by the bridge and I just shot the driver of that armoured vehicle." "Oh, very good," he said, and made a note and disappeared. Then I joined up with a couple of other people, and we wondered how we were going to stop armoured cars, and had a brilliant idea. On the marsh, all the electric cables to the various farms and so on, which were isolated, were strung on telegraph poles.